Well, very interesting. It's the wrong verse. Huh? Well, it's a nice verse. Huh? No, I was going to do the six limbs of surrender. Huh? Did you write this? What happened? How many? Yeah. Where's Leela Manjari? Well, gee, it's a nice verse. I don't have the... What's that? Yeah, it's the wrong verse. So, gee whiz. I beg your pardon? I can't hear you. Most of you that have phones can pull up the... Those of you that have phones, or whatever you have as a device, electronic device, digital thing or other, Mudgee the chapter 22, text 100. Anukulyasya sankalpa. So those of you that have a device can look it up, and those of you that don't, just, you have good ears. And those that don't have good ears and don't have a device can listen and just hang on. Well, here's another one. In Bhagavad, so a little background. Some of you are here that weren't with us yesterday evening, and welcome. For the fifth time, welcome. And we began yesterday evening, Dravida Prabhu began yesterday evening by reading and then making an awesome presentation on 1866 Bhagavad Gita. 1866 Bhagavad Gita is the verse of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes or enjoins Arjuna, tells Arjuna to surrender. And tells us to surrender. And in the purport of that surrender verse is the six symptoms of surrender. So I was thinking to encourage all of you, some appreciation for yesterday evening's class. It was a lot. And I recommend that in the course of this topic is so essential for progressing in Krishna consciousness. Not only, Dravida said it twice, it's not an event, it's a process. Surrender isn't like once upon a time I surrendered and now Hari Bol. It's an ongoing submission unto Krishna and progressing further and further and further and further. We'll hear that as we go along. So the topic is so essential, I recommend, and the presentations that are going to have very, very valuable understandings, that I recommend that you listen to the recordings again, take notes, because Dravida covered like eight different points. Oh, here's another point, and he speaks a little fast. And, you know, I had my seatbelt fastened and I was in takeoff mode the whole time. It was really wonderful. So I'm encouraging, and I'll do something, I'll go a little slower, but there are important points in the process of surrender. And then this verse is the anatomy of surrender, and then we're going to go, you know, to whatever you call it, an autopsy. In-depth discussion of each of the limbs. The word is in Sanskrit is anga. There are six angas or limbs of surrender. So I'm going to be discussing the six limbs of surrender. He discussed surrender. These are the six limbs of surrender. He went through the first two a little bit. And then further and further. So what's the goal? to progressively, not like climb the mountain. He used a very nice metaphor of we're at the foothills, and then lying beyond the foothills is the mountain range, and then there's Mount Everest. So, but the distinction here is that when the process of surrender is done nicely, Krishna picks us up. It's not like we can be lazy or complacent, but we can't do it on our own, but Krishna will, when he sees that submission, different than just, anyway, when he sees, Dravida made a nice distinction between, there's different meanings of submission. Anyway, listen to his class again. Wonderful class. The goal is to become further progressed on this process of surrender up to the final stage. So you'll hear some things in this class that are addressed at that point. And then as we go along, it'll go more in depth and more in depth, and hopefully we'll all be more surrendered, closer to Krishna, closer to the goal of wherever we are, closer to the goal by further submission and further surrender and further, you know, touch the lotus feet of Krishna and grab hold of them. That kind of surrender. Okay, so now you've got your devices ready and your ears ready. We'll chant the six limbs of surrender verse, Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse number 100. Anukalyasya sankalpa, pratikoyasya varjanam, rakshishyati ti vishvaso, goptritve varanam tata, atma nikshepa karpanye, shadvidha sharanagati. One more time. Anukayasya sankalpa, pratikoyasya varjanam, rakshishyati ti vishvaso, gopritme varanam tata, atma nikshepa karpanye, shadvidha sharanagatihi. And I'm going to skip the word for word, and we'll just read the translation found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service. That's one. The rejection of unfavorable things. The conviction that Krishna will give me protection. The acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master. Full self-surrender and humility. And I think what I'm going to do is, before I start reading Prabhupada's purport, I'm going to do a few other things. This is from a section of verses. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami is one of the principal associates of Lord Chaitanya. Next, after Lord Chaitanya in the line of disciplic succession, Rupa and Sanatana. So the title of the chapter is The Process of Devotional Service. So he's describing how devotional service begins and then how it progresses. That's the section. And preceding this section, there's a number of very nice verses that I'm going to be making reference to, so it's within a context. but extracting some verses, where Krishna says how bhakti, devotional service, begins. It begins with association of devotees. We're going to be discussing that little section. And then through association of devotees, one comes to know about Krishna. Not just God, but the personality of Godhead. And when one becomes knowledgeable about who Krishna is, not just God, but the personality, it serves as impetus for surrender to Krishna. That's another one of the subjects. So we'll be covering those verses. It's a very nice instruction. So to assist what I'm going to do this morning is, this is Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Of course, Lord Chaitanya also instructed Rupa Goswami, and he has his section in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, our nectar devotion. And Jiva Goswami was the student of both Sanatana and Rupa Goswami, and he wrote about the same thing. So there's, our great acharyas are giving us a big assist. You don't have to speculate. We just go to our acharyas and hear from our acharyas, and Prabhupada has synthesized it very simply and nicely. So we'll go through our founder acharya's purport. But there's some nice points that Jiva Goswami gives on this topic of the six limbs of surrender, which I'd like to start with. It's on the same topic, the six limbs of surrender. So he, this is found in his Bhakti Sandarbha, text or Anuchet number 236 and 237. One day BBT will maybe provide us with something. But Bhanu Swami has translated. So this is from Bhanu Swami's translation. Jiva Goswami begins the section saying, first, surrender or Sharanapati will be discussed. So Sharana, the same term is found in Bhagavad Gita 1866. Sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam Sharanam Raja. So Sharanam. So Sharanapati, Sharanagati, these different, that the root is the same meaning, surrender. The steps of surrender. So Jiva Goswami begins his discussion with Anuchet 236, Bhakti Sandarbha. The first little section, little paragraph, is recognizing the material circumstance. So there's volumes and volumes and volumes in the Bhagavatam and other writings that make it very clear we're in a difficult circumstance. One devotee wrote to me recently saying, I don't really understand as well as I should understand how much suffering the living entity have in this material world. So this is as a beginning point in Jiva Goswami's treatment on this topic. Afflicted by fear of samsara. Samsara means birth and death. By the enemies. The six enemies in the form of the six vargas. Lust, greed, anger, delusion, pride, and envy. Some of these are described in Bhagavad Gita. Kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja. These are six. And every living entity in this material world is afflicted by them. They that they're enemies in the sense, he specifically says, because they cause aversion to Krishna. When you get so caught up in these six, your attention is taken away from Krishna. They keep us so busy, so distracted, so conflicted, so disturbed, so agitated. You know, the position of living entity is not nice. Not nice specifically in the sense of forgetfulness of Krishna. So he says, recognizing that circumstance, then it's an impetus. You know, the good side of the bad circumstance of life is an impetus for surrender. And when one surrenders, then this principle of bhakti can awaken, and the principle of bhakti can deflate, diffuse, dismiss, annihilate these six enemies, you know, progressively. We'll hear that mentioned. Progressively, proportionate to one's surrender, one experiences freedom. And, you know, the converse, proportionate to our lack of surrender, we experience these things and they rule our lives. It's like a dimmer switch. So there's darkness, turn on the light. Yeah, but, you know, lust, anger, greed, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja, I'm too busy. I'm too afflicted by these enemies. I don't have time for surrender. I don't have any bandwidth for it. I'm too busy with, you know, struggling. Similar message in Bhagavad Gita. Daivyeshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya. Very difficult struggle with this material energy. But mam evaye prapadyante. So there's this word prapadyante, which is similar to sharana. One who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond it. Same message. So it's the struggle is these six. And we're, it's like the waves are big. Sometimes they're bigger than big. They crush us. And we're drowning and so on. So, recognizing that, surrender. And then, the very next little short paragraph, listen carefully. Jiva Goswami says, there are two methods of taking shelter. Two methods of taking shelter. One, by announcing that one has no other shelter. Two, by giving up other means of shelter by using good intelligence. Well, interesting. Not surprising at all, but also interesting. This verse that we chanted together, Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse 100, verse before that, 99, says the same thing. Krishna Das Kaviraj. Guess where they got it from? Rupa and Sanatan. Guess where they got it from? Lord Chaitanya. So, disciplic succession. Text 99, translation reads, there are two kinds of devotees. Those who are fully satiated and free from all material desires. The term sharan, akinchanera. Persons who are free from material desires. Akinchana. Akinchana. Any bells ringing? Akinchana. Queen Kunti. Akinchana. Queen Kunti says, those that, we'll say it the opposite. Those that have material shelters, they cannot feelingly call out for Krishna. Say it positively. Those that do not have other shelters can feelingly call out for Krishna. So there's this akinchana of those who are surrendered to Krishna because they're afflicted and they don't want to be afflicted. And so Krishna is the only opportunity, or God is the only opportunity for them to overcome their affliction. So they turn to Him materially, with no material shelter. Doesn't mean that you're a pauper. You're a destitute person with no means. You may have means, but you recognize they're not shelter. Now, generally, people in this world think they're shelter. And I have to, using this economic term, I have to hedge. I learned this from a devotee that majored in finance at an Ivy League school. It's one of the first things they teach is hedging. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, if you're going to invest, you invest over here and over here and over here and over here. So there's hedge funds. So they train college students how to hedge. But bhakti is no hedging. There's only one shelter. Or as Jagatananda Pandit, wonderful, wonderful, super wonderful devotee of Lord Chaitanya, writes, don't make the mistake of trying to cross the river putting one foot in two boats. You'll end up in the river. You won't cross the river. So if you want to go with spiritual life, put both feet in the spiritual boat. Don't hedge. Akinchana. One shelter. So there's this other shelter, mixed shelters, in case Krishna lets me down. Or just due to my conditioning, I'm habituated to multiple shelters, then one can't feelingly call out. And then we wonder, why is our chanting mechanical? Because we're not feelingly calling out, because we have other shelters. Our mind is going to those other things. So there's these two kinds of surrender. One is this akinchana kind. Those are fully satiated and free from all material desires. And then there's a second kind of devotee, those who are fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord. They don't have material shelters. They're super enthusiastic or eager and hankering and coveting that. Dravida was explaining it very nicely yesterday. The qualities of these two, this Sharanagatera, those that are surrendered and those that have no material shelter, their qualities are the same. But those that are fully surrendered to Krishna's lotus feet are qualified with another transcendental quality. Atma Samarpana. Full surrender without reservation. Full surrender without reservation. That, you know, reservation. This is this hedging. Or one foot in two boats. You know, it may even be that I'm approaching Krishna with a mixed desire. I want in exchange for my service. I want Krishna's shelter and I want my wishes fulfilled, my material aspirations fulfilled. And so then that's neither akinchana nor sharanagatera. It's mixed. There was a question yesterday that Jumana Jivana asked, and I don't know if everybody, especially our newer people, caught that question and the answer. For those of you that didn't, Dravida Prabhu was saying very eloquently that this 1866 verse is the final instruction of Krishna, and all of the previous instructions are to be set aside, parityaja, and it's not, anyway, in favor of this one principle. What's the one principle? Surrender to Krishna. So Jumana Jivana's question was, during Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Ramananda Roy, very wonderful discussion during his South India tour, there was this, Lord Chaitanya's asking Ramananda Roy, please explain what is the goal of life and the means to attain it. And one of the five items that Ramananda Roy said, offered, was 1866 Bhagavad Gita. And then Lord Chaitanya said, go further. And later he says, it's external devotional service. So Jamuna Jeevan's question was, if this is like Krishna's ultimate instruction in Bhagavad Gita, why is Lord Chaitanya dismissing it? That was your question, correct? So Dravidic Prabhu gave very nice explanation, and I wanted to just cover another feature of what Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita on this topic. And you can look it up later. It's Mandalila chapter 8, text number 68, purport. Just the last paragraph, I'm going to read it. First I'll summarize it. It's very similar to what Dravidya Prabhu was saying in his class yesterday evening, that we're at the foothills of ascending. So we're just beginning the process. So in the process of surrender, that 1866 indicates a beginning of surrender. And beginning, if followed properly, leads to the goal. But beginning is the beginning, and the beginning, there's often a mix, and the goal is unmixed. That's the indication in this purport. The goal is unmixed, not just a beginning. Because what Lord Chaitanya says, what Krishna Das Kaviraj says that he said, is, go say something further. Go ahead. Say something more. So besides just like beginning, there's this something more. You know, mature stage. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Devotional activities sometimes appear to be impure in the neophyte stage. But in the mature stage, they are completely pure from material activity. That's this sarva-dharmam. Again, as Dravida was saying, referencing 1.1.2 Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra. All those dharmas or principles of religious activity that are mixed with material motivation. This Bhagavatam is going to address only pure devotional service. So, therefore, Ramananda Roy replied, after hearing the last statement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, prema bhakti, sarva, sadhya, sar. Prema bhakti, sarva, sadhya. Sadhya means
goal.
There's a sadhana to reach a goal. Sadhana reaches sadhya. Sarva, sadhya, sar. Sar means essence. The essence of sarva sadhya, of all goals. What's that? Prema bhakti. And prema bhakti is not mixed. So one may surrender mixed. And then come to the stage of unmixed. So we'll just continue. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually accepted this verse, the Jnane Prayasam verse, verse spoken by Lord Brahma, as the basic principle of perfection. Again, one has to practice this principle to make further progress. When further progress is actually made, one comes to the platform of ecstatic loving service to the Lord. The first stage is technically called sadhana bhakti, or devotional service in practice. The result of sadhana must be, if cultivated towards the goal, must be ecstatic love, attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is also called prema bhakti. Again, in the neophyte stage, Sarada Bhakti includes faith association with devotees practicing. 1866, go further to pure devotional service, not just the foothills, but keep going. So that's the message for all of us too. We're practicing devotional service at some level or another. Continue with that submission and surrender. Interesting. So now back to Jiva Goswami, same as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, indicating Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. There's these two kinds. One is when one abandons all other shelters, and he gives as an example a prayer by Nanda Maharaj. Who is Nanda Maharaj? The father of Krishna, right? So a prayer by Nanda Maharaj. And praying to Krishna. Nanda Maharaj offers, he's the father, offering a prayer to Krishna, saying, no one in this material world, fearful of the snake of time, has become free from fear, even by fleeing to various planets. But now that you have appeared, death is fleeing in fear of you, and the living entities have obtained shelter at your lotus feet. By your mercy, are fearless and tranquil. So no other shelter. The taking exclusive shelter, like the statement previously, is just making a declaration. I take shelter of you. Maybe some of you are familiar with the very wonderful statement made by Lord Ramachandra in relation to Vibhishan, accepting Vibhishan's submission. We went to that place in South India. It's very powerful, potent place. The place where multiple persons surrendered to Lord Ramachandra. But where Vibhishan surrendered, he says to his associates, one who even once, this is Sharanagati, one who even once states, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours. This is the first of these two kinds. I, Lord Ramachandra, will protect them, including protecting them from fear. I make this solemn vow. And Ramachandra doesn't break his vow. So, back to, well, maybe it's an event. You just say it once. Now, there's the ongoing, not only, as Dravida said, day after day, but literally moment to moment. The free will of the living entity is operative at every moment. And sometimes we're wisely choosing, and sometimes we're not wisely choosing. We become forgetful, and Supersoul sees that inclination and he covers us with forgetfulness. That's also discussed. How does that happen? You'll hear some more as we go along. How does that happen? So it's this proportionate to. Then there's another kind of surrender. Qualitatively, it has another element to it. And where by use of intelligence, one rules out the other shelters. You don't keep them around. They're like not just swept away, but even the very root of them is taken away. And the example that he gives is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. Krishna is advising Uddhava. This is in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. O Uddhava, similar to Sarvadharmam Prityaja, give up Shruti and Smriti, the path of enjoyment and the path of renunciation, as well as your desire to hear more about Dharma. And what you've already heard about Dharma, you know, throw your hands up in the air and say, Hari Bol. Surrender to me alone, the soul of all beings, using all methods with bhava in your mind. You will be fearless by my mercy. Very similar to 1866. So the element of active submission, understanding there's other options out there, there's other supports out there. Even if I do these other things, there's one thing. And he goes on saying, Krishna says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. So the encouragement is, use your faculty of discernment as best you can, and consciously, moment to moment, choose the shelter of Krishna, whether it's the situation of difficulty or the situation of everything is very nice. Choose. Yeah, this is what's being encouraged. And then he goes on and presents these six limbs of surrender, and again starts to go through them. So we'll go now back to Prabhupada's purport of Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 22, text 100. One who is fully surrendered, purport by Prabhupada, one is fully surrendered is qualified with the six following characteristics, 1 and 2. The devotee has to accept everything that is favorable for rendering of transcendental loving service to the Lord. 2, he must reject everything unfavorable to the Lord's service. This is also called renunciation. So there's injunctions and prohibitions, vidhis and nishetas, things to be done, things not to be done. And the things not to be done is in the second category. They impede seeing Krishna. So we have our four rules, the four restrictions. They're very basic and fundamental. There's other ones too. There's like lots of others. I had this opportunity, a very nice Jewish young man, like, you know, staunch Jewish young man, had made in his college experience, had made a friend with an Indian girl who was regularly visiting the temple. So he came to the temple to find out more about Krishna consciousness. And his first question was, in Krishna consciousness, do you have rules? Not, you know, in a challenging way, but in Jewish faith, from our discussion, I came to understand, those that are followers of Jewish faith, they understand there's laws. And to be a good Jewish person, you follow the laws. You follow the laws. That's what being a good Jewish person is. Know what the laws are and follow the laws. And if you don't follow the laws, you're not a good Jewish person. So in your organization, in your teachings, are there rules? Are there laws to be followed? So yeah, there's laws to be followed, injunctions and prohibitions. We have these four regular principles. And then there's multiple others, but you know these are core, really, really fundamental. Like, you know, this chair stands on four legs. Prabhupada's example, you know, saw off one of the legs and you're on the floor. So four pillars, the prohibitions, because why they're sinful? Why? What's the nature of sin? Why? Because it blocks your ability to see Krishna. Accepting things and favorable, rejecting things unfavorable. So we're 2 down and 4 to go. 3. A devotee must be firmly convinced that Krishna will give him protection. No one else can actually give one protection. And being firmly convinced of this is called faith. This kind of faith is different from the faith of an impersonalist who wants to merge into the Brahman effulgence in order to benefit by cessation of repeated birth and death. A devotee wants to remain always in the Lord's service. In this way, Krishna is merciful to his devotee and gives him all protection from the dangers found on the path of devotional service. What are the dangers found on the path of devotional service? Well, there's lots of them. But just, you know, being in this world is a danger. Dravida quoted that nice verse, Padam Padam Yadvi Padam Nate Sham. And even if you don't step, just stand still and there's danger. Take a step and there's danger. It's dangerous. So to engage in devotional service, we're extending our senses specifically into the field of the material energy and contacting sense objects for the purpose of serving Krishna. In doing that, there's danger. In not doing so, there's danger. But doing so, if you're surrendered, you recognize Krishna will protect me. And one who has that consciousness that Krishna will protect me, Krishna protects him or her. Krishna protects that soul. Otherwise, it's fearful. And if one isn't fearful, one's foolish. Actually, at the deep inside, there's fearfulness. Because we don't know what's going to happen next. Here's what Jiva Goswami says. It's really short. Prabhupada expanded on it a bit. He quotes a verse from Third Canto Bhagavatam. The process of creation is being described. The Lord of the three worlds, who is the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction, the original person whose power of yogamaya cannot be understood even by the greatest of yogis, will give security. What is the use of deliberating on this? That's all he says. And that's the quote from the verse. What's the use of deliberating on it? So, of the, just a little appreciation, is embodied beings have propensities, Prabhupada has taught us, because scripture teaches, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And as long as you have a body, one is driven by these four. And of the four, the most powerful one is defending or protecting. One can be eating, sleeping, or mating, and if some danger comes, you stop any one of those three things to do the one thing. Defending. It drives everything else. It overrules everything else. Very powerful, as long as you're embodied or identify with the body. As we heard Dravida's wonderful class, one can come even to the stage of there's fearlessness even of death, like Shukadeva Goswami and others. But that position is possible when you understand that Krishna will protect you. And that Krishna will protect you doesn't mean you never lose your body. Like, you'll live eternally with perfect health. Just become a devotee. That's not the means. And Dravida made that very clear. Very, very wonderful class. The relationship with Krishna is protected. Our remembrance of Krishna is protected. Krishna will protect us ultimately in that way. And he may extend his protection diversely in other ways. But as specifically, if I engage in his service, if I extend my senses into the field of the material energy and contact sense objects, I don't need to fear. Because Krishna's protection will be there. However, if you forget what you're doing, you're going about the process of devotional service, and there's whatever you want to call it, a lapse. The surrender to Krishna mood kind of fades. Immediately, you're captured by Maya. Remember one lecture at Henry Street in Brooklyn? Prabhupada was explaining this principle. One should never become complacent, he was saying. If at some point one thinks, well, I've done a lot of devotional service, I've really surrendered a whole lot, a little break. He said, there's no break. A little break. And he said, it's not like then you can call Maya, okay, Maya, come. No. Immediately Maya is there. As soon as there's a break or lapse or complacency or now let me enjoy. You don't even have to call Maya to come enjoy. Immediately, you're covered. And Maya means you can't see Krishna. Whatever that circumstance is, you can't see Krishna. How unfortunate. How dangerous. How fearful. So the protection, Krishna protects us from that if we're surrendered. Okay, so that's 3 out of 6. We're halfway done. Then number 4, going back to the purport of text 100. The devotee should accept Krishna as his supreme maintainer and master. He should not think that he is being protected by a demigod. He should depend only on Krishna, considering him the only protector. The devotee must be firmly convinced that within the three worlds, he has no protector or maintainer other than Krishna. He said it 4 times. So in Jiva Goswami's writing, interesting, he says, out of the 6, this one is number 1. Or he uses the word angi. Out of the other 5 are angas. Some of you are a little bit familiar with this language of there is different avatars and Krishna is the avatari, the source of all the other avatars. You're familiar with that? Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. That Krishna is the avatari and others are avatars. So similarly, angi is that root of all the other angas. It's the principal limb. So let's hear what Jiva Goswami has to say about that. He gives some references from the Puranas. First, Nrisinga Purana. I surrender to you, Janardana, Lord of Lords. That's this declaration of, I have no other shelter. I deliver the person from suffering who surrenders in this manner. Nrisinga Purana. Then he goes on and saying, the way that that surrender can be exhibited is through 3 mediums, body, mind, and words. And for that he quotes Brahma Purana. Those who surrender with actions, mind, and words cannot be touched by Yamaraj and enjoy the results of liberation. Then he gives one more reference from Hari Bhakti Vilas saying, I am yours, just like this Lord Ramachandra saying, this declaration, I am yours. Knowing this in the mind, so that's what your mind does, and then what your body does. Take shelter of the Lord's places with the body. The surrendered soul experiences joy. And then he goes on to say that this is proportionate. There's 6 limbs, and they're proportionately experienced. And according to the proportionate experience, one experiences joy. And when you experience joy, like spiritual happiness, it makes it really easy to stay far away from the distractions of material attraction. Asat Trishna, thirst for the impermanent, that's our affliction. That's a source of bad things in the heart, anartas in the heart, unwanted things in the heart. The thirst for the impermanent. So proportionate to one's taking this position of shelter. So that's how Krishna is the one. And that's the Angi. And then we can let go of other shelters. Is it clear? Thanks. But we don't take shelter of Krishna. We're going to hang out with other shelters and experience being covered and experience duality, you know, sometimes happy, sometimes miserable, and etc. And, you know, be scratching our heads. Why is the process of bhakti not working? Not the process of bhakti isn't working. Krishna is recognizing your mixed shelters and he's reciprocating proportionately. The finger pointing goes inside. To emphasize this, Jiva Goswami points to a statement made by Uddhava to Krishna in Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto. O Lord, Uddhava speaking to Krishna, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are like a refreshing umbrella that pours showers of nectar. Interesting poetry. You did? Okay. So, umbrella keeps showers away. But you hold this umbrella and it pours showers of nectar. For those who surrender and remove all suffering, we can't remove our suffering. But the false shelters is our suffering, or it's the root of our suffering. It's ignorance, false shelters. So remove false shelters and you remove suffering. But we're attached to trying to be the enjoyers of these false shelters, and so we maintain them, we invest consciousness in them, we cling tightly to them. If someone starts to tug on them, or the material energy starts to tug on them, we scream. And we become miserable because they're very dear to us. And then the worst of all is we forget Krishna as a result. But those that abandon those, and as a result the sufferings connected with those, showers of nectar come. A transcendental happiness. Okay, so that's 4 out of 6. And there's 2 more. And they're nice ones. Number 5. Self-surrender means remembering that one's activities and desires are not independent. The devotee is completely dependent on Krishna, and he acts and thinks as Krishna desires. Now here's, Jiva Goswami has a lot to say on this one too. And that's very beneficial. His message primarily is renouncing false ego is this one. Atma nikshepa. Renouncing false ego. Well, it's really easy to say it. But the renouncing false ego ain't easy. Like, We're covered by false ego. And it's not just like, you know, instead of being a macho guy, you become a humble guy. That's not the meaning. That's not like renounce false ego. Now you did it. You accomplished it. You became meek and humble instead of a macho guy. But false ego covers the meek and humble guy too. You know, it's misidentification of who we are. And misidentification of who we are starts even before there's a body, a gross and subtle body. There's a long explanation of this. I'm spending some time with another Jiva Goswami writing Tattva Sandarbha of the Pramaya Khanda. And he deals with the Buddhist's idea of nirvana. Anyway, it's a long presentation, long discussion. But even in the susupti state, the, you know, deep sleep, when the living entities are the mind and the intelligence are in abeyance, they're just not even active, even then consciousness is there. So Buddhists say, well, that's nirvana. There's no consciousness, period. So this other thing that you call conscious, that's also not conscious, because all there really is, you know, this nothingness state. But even in that susupti state, Jiva Goswami argues against the Buddhists that there is consciousness, even it's deep, evidenced by the fact when you come out of that susupti state, then you exhibit consciousness. But it's just held in abeyance, that's all. It's like if you have an operation, they put you under anesthesia. When the anesthesia wears off, you wake up. You just continue your activities from where you left off. It's the same. But even so, when the living entities are injected in the Mahatattva, before we even get a you know, activated body and mind again, there's false ego. It's a big one. False ego is a big one. And this stage of surrender follows behind, according to Jiva Goswami, this, the Lord is my master, because otherwise we can't get rid of that false ego. It's going to like completely control us, even if we're trying to be, you know, a nice person or a good devotee. It's going to rule our lives. It's insidious. It just doesn't want to go away. But Krishna can take it away. And he says several things, wonderful things. We'll discuss one of them tomorrow. Namaha. He quotes Padma Purana, so I'll only mention it quickly, but Namaha, he says, Ma represents ahankar, and Na is negation. Namaha. Like we know, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Namaha. Or, you know, you come in from international arrivals in India and in Delhi, and you just show a pair of hands folded and Namaskar, like welcome. Namaha. Literally it means no false ego. And when there's false ego, somebody was asking or suggesting, one of the things they struggle with is how to be Krishna conscious in the workplace. Any of you have that? How to be, you know, when you're in the temple, you're doing your sadhana bhakti, no problem. One devotee in New Jersey said, I get it. Now, but from 9 to 5, I don't get it. Sit down at my workplace and, you know, Krishna consciousness light goes off and 5 o'clock goes on again. And what happened? There's all these, you know, 8 hours. And where did Krishna consciousness go? How do you be Krishna conscious in the workplace? Namaha. When you operate with false ego, you think that you're the doer of activity. Kartahamite manyate, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, I'm the doer. So if I'm the doer, how is your work going to get done if you don't do your work? How do you be Krishna conscious in the workplace? Namaha. No false ego. Or things are not happening because you're making them happen. Well, who's making them happen? Prakriti is making them happen. The verse in Bhagavad Gita, the kartrid from the karmani lokasya srijate prabho. Krishna says, Arjuna, my dear devotees that go to work or go to school, my dear devotees, never think that you're the cause of action, nor are you the cause of the results of action, nor are you inducing other people to act. That's like everything that people do in the world. You're doing some work, you're causing some work, and you're causing others to do something. Or combination. Don't think like that. Really? This is all being carried out by Prakriti. So what are we doing? Namaha. We're engaged in surrender to Krishna in the workplace. We're doing our occupational duty that's prescribed for us according to our nature. For Krishna, that's what we're doing. Really? So that takes some cultivation, because if you have false ego, you won't be able to think that way. And we all have false ego till we're like liberated souls. So that surrender carries away this ahankar. Krishna, you're my master. I can't go to the workplace and be Krishna conscious. Or I can't go to school and be Krishna conscious. Or I can't stay in the temple and be Krishna conscious, because there's all my false ego is getting in the way. Krishna, please take my false ego away. And then when Krishna takes your false ego away, don't scream. Krishna, what are you doing? You're taking my false ego away. It's mine. It's me. It's who I am. We're going to cover this some more. He quotes a verse from Bhavishya Purana, which says, let me just make sure it's Bhavishya Purana. Oh, excuse me, Brahma Vaivarta Purana. The Lord is easily accessible for those who renounce ahankar. For those with ahankar, there's a mountain range between them and the Lord. Now, I know a couple of people that have really, like, mountainous false egos, mountainous pride, and the Lord is far away. But they don't know the Lord is far away. They think something else because of pride. And the root of that pride is false ego. And that's how he concludes this little section. This is a quote from Third Canto, Chapter 9, Bhagavatam. As long as people see the only condition of the jiva's body possessing the strength of the Lord's maya in the form of sense objects, jiva's material existence, though insubstantial, will not be destroyed. It produces great suffering and gives results for all actions. That's the translation's a little rough to read. It's Bhadra Swami's. But you know, the emphasis is upon, if ahankara rules, basically if you're trying to be a good person, but ahankara rules, then you're stuck. And rather than experience joy, you experience sorrow and misery and the results of all actions. Here's the final little reference. This is Prabhupada's translation of 399. Oh my Lord, the material miseries are without factual existence for the soul. Yet, as long as the conditioned soul sees the body as a means for sense enjoyment, he cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries being influenced by your external energy. So external energy rules the body and the senses and your experience, the mind and your happiness and distress and everything. The external energy rules that as long as you're ruled by ahankar. So we may know better. We will all get an A in the exam. that says, are you spirit, soul, or are you this body? We'll get that one right. Check that box. We're spirit, soul. But then to act in that consciousness, to be able to be in that consciousness, requires surrender beyond theoretical. Prabhupada writes it in his Bhagavad Gita purport. Beyond theoretical, where there's no chance of being engaged in fruitive activity. That's surrender. And so, pride. The person who thinks he is independent or proud is bound in samsara. Pride. Thinking one is independent. Thinking that you can do things. You're going to get things done. You're going to... acting through false ego. Problema. Big problem. What's the solution? Surrender. Let go of that by the force, the power of Krishna, by submitting to Krishna. Because otherwise, I'm losing the struggle. And then the last one is humility. And in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, he includes humility in the first of his songs. It starts with humility, dainya. So here's Prabhupada's words on dainya. The devotee is meek and humble, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15. I'm situated in the heart. I'm situated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Situated in everyone's heart, Krishna deals differently according to the living entity's position. The living entity's position is to be under the protection of the illusory energy or under Krishna's personal protection. When a living entity is fully surrendered, he is under the direct protection of Krishna. And Krishna gives him all intelligence by which he can advance in spiritual realization. The non-devotee, however, being under the protection of the illusory energy, increasingly forgets his relationship with Krishna. Sometimes it is asked, here's this question I said would be explained. Sometimes it is asked, how Krishna causes one to forget? Answer. Krishna causes his devotee to forget material activities. I mean, like forget to go to work or forget to get up when the alarm clock rings. But forget the material aspiration element of those things. And through the agency of Maya, Krishna causes the non-devotee to forget his devotional service to the Lord. This is called apohana. So surrender doesn't mean stop your activity. It's not karma sannyas. Stop your work. Don't go to school. Don't develop your career. You know, become complacent and, you know, Krishna will take care of you. That's not the idea. Not karma sannyas. Then you do the other and there's risk. You're extending your senses into the field of material energy and there's objects out there that the senses go, woo, woo. Krishna is our protector. Krishna is our maintainer. Krishna is our dearmost friend. And he, with the absence of false ego, Krishna will recognize that we really want him and Krishna will help us. And it's progressive. Again, referring to something that Dravida said so nicely twice. It's continual process of surrender. And whatever it is that we have the capacity to surrender today, let it become more as the day progresses and continue and continue and continue. The glory of the gopis is not that, you know, Mother Jasoda is doesn't have selfless love for Krishna, but the intensity of that selflessness of the gopis is super excellent. They've taken it to the as far as it can go. And we're meant to go as far as we can go in that process from whatever our position is at present. Continue through the right means with good association and continuing to hear and all of the other things that you're going to hear that will nourish taking shelter of Krishna. It's a nice subject, isn't it? So any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Sorry. It is said that the surrender is a continual process.
Yes.
How would I, you know, when I go out for my work, naturally I forget about Krishna, it's my situation. But even in otherwise situation, when should I identify that I am right now surrendering to Krishna or I am not surrendering to Krishna?
What's the barometer between surrendering and not surrendering? How do you know whether you're surrendering or not surrendering? Is that your question?
Yeah. How will I understand
well,
that?
It's consciousness. That just like, I mean, one response is, when you're chanting, how do I know if I'm attentive or not attentive? If you're attentive, then you're surrendering. If you're surrendering, you're attentive. So where's your, if your attention is elsewhere, you're not surrendering. So it's not a binary thing. It's not like, it's not, this is not simply the mind. Because the mind, people do this artificial, if you know, how can I be Krishna conscious in the workplace? It's from the soul. When you become attached to someone, you think of that someone while you're doing your regular activity. So you're not, you know, inattentive to your regular activity. Prabhupada explains this. A devotee is more conscientious than a non-devotee materialist because they're doing for Krishna. So the inside is attachment to Krishna, you're doing for Krishna. So you're protected by Krishna, so you do it very nicely. Because you're doing it for Krishna. So it's where your attachment is. Okay? It's the soul. And the soul's connection with Krishna. Driva, do you have something?
While you're speaking about the... Oh, I'm sorry. Shelter. It was all taking shelter. Sharanagati. And how the material energy... We're constantly being betrayed. That verse came up, fallible soldiers. Mm. You know, that's the same idea, beginning of the second canto. And so my mind was thinking, well, how does that manifest in this world? And it suddenly dawned on me, this whole economic crisis that has manifested in the last 8 years now. So much of it is involved with people wanting shelter, literally housing. The housing, you know? I'm going to have help. And so the demonic bankers and everybody take advantage of that. Okay, we'll give you a loan that we know you can't pay back. Oh, so I can get a house. And then they can't pay it back. And the loan is, you know, then they make all kinds of money on it. And you're thrown out of your house. And now you're on the street or you have to room with your cousin or something. You know what I mean? So the material energy is constantly doing that. Betraying us. We're taking shelter of this. And it doesn't work. Taking shelter of the body, like, you know, the fallible soldiers. So this principle of Sharanagati, of taking shelter of the really worthy shelter of Krishna, is central to the whole process of devotional service.
That's the higher position than not having material expectations, is knowingly taking shelter of the real shelter.
Yeah.
Of these two.
Exactly.
And there's six angas to that. Yes.
Maharaj, so I hope I can say this right. If someone has a shelter off a pure devotee or core relationship in their life, they may not feel like they need to call out to Krishna very intensely. Or if we look at the other side, when someone's struggling to find shelter in a core relationship, then they become desperate and they call out very intensely because they know that ultimately, okay, Krishna's the only shelter, but there's some confusion because it is, one should take shelter of the core relationships in the life. But does the confusion make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll give a few different answers. I remember somebody was asking Prabhupada, is it okay to pray to the spiritual master? Is it okay to pray to Krishna? Because then I'm jumping over the spiritual master. Is that okay, Prabhupada? He laughed and said that they're inseparable. To see them separate is a false dichotomy. To see them separate is a false dichotomy. So in other words, if there is proper shelter in a person who is representing Krishna, you'll see Krishna behind them because Krishna is behind them. Their value, their merit, their worthiness is their transparency. They're bringing Krishna. So it doesn't mean I don't pray to Krishna. They're the same. You know, that one is representing Krishna and the other is Krishna. They're not separate. So that the praying to take shelter of Krishna is part and parcel of having shelter in someone who's directing you to Krishna. Yeah, sure.
In the first chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it deals with the spiritual master. And one of the statements that always this comes out when these topics are raised, Prabhupada says, quote, in the purport, one should never think of his or her spiritual master without thinking of the spiritual master's relationship with Krishna. In other words, to try to, say, yes, well, Krishna's in the background. So that it has to be together like that.
It's a false dichotomy. Or you could say it's an incomplete understanding of what shelter and spiritual master means, who the spiritual master is. So then I need to refine my understanding of who the spiritual master is, not that's the root, not something else. Spiritual master means one who gives Krishna. They're not distinct. Is that all right? You have to process it a little bit. Huh?
If one is feeling fully sheltered by the spiritual master, pure devotee, then...
That's Krishna.
Okay. It's like if you feel fully sheltered, then how can you get to that desperate calling out? It's almost like Queen Kunti, like keep giving me misery, so that I can. But then.
Well, the reality. So part of the reality set is, as long as we're in this material world, padam padam yadvi padam natesham. There's a danger that I may, feeling sheltered, it's like an immature child, may, being sheltered by loving parents, turn away from their loving parent. Just because I'm complacent. So the one of the antidotes for complacency is to recognize there's danger at every step. You've heard me repeat this, I'm sure. Prabhupada's statement, why I will never forget Krishna, is I'm always praying to Krishna that please protect me from Maya. That danger of darkness by forgetfulness of what it means to be in a position of shelter, I may become complacent, and then I'm at risk. It's not a position of fearfulness, just a position of mindfulness of what our position is. We're dependent. And as a dependent, the dependent can be protected, but the dependent is dependent. And for that position of protection. I feel safe. I feel protected. But I'm not going to let go of that position. That's the calling out. The proper exercise of free will part. In the ecstatic stage of love of God, then, that may change. There's only one thing. We'll hear some more about this particular point.
Thank you.
Impetus for taking shelter of Krishna. Yes, in the back?
A couple of things, like the principle of Ishavashyam says, accept only whatever is your quota.
Yeah.
And here we are talking about accepting things which are favorable to Krishna. And then the lifestyle that a person lives and is brought up in, they have some material needs.
Yes.
And till the material needs are not in place and being fulfilled, one does not feel impetus to serve Krishna.
Well, the question is a little similar. We need to serve Krishna because that's who we are. We need to be who we are. And if we're not being who we are, then we're in trouble. We're in Maya. We need to serve Krishna because otherwise we're in Maya. And Maya's not nice. She doesn't treat people nice. So we need to be in Krishna's service.
Elsewhere in Bhagavatam it says that one should reduce one's material needs as one progresses in Krishna consciousness.
So, well, that happens naturally. Not we have to be in anxiety about it, but yes. When one is feeling very full and satisfied, needs diminish because we're feeling full and satisfied.
So my question is, looks like as we progress in Krishna consciousness, what is favorable for Krishna, for his service, varies, depends on where we are in our Krishna consciousness.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You got it. So from person to person, and even in our own lives, and even from one day to the next, or one part of our life to the next, needs change in proportion to our Krishna consciousness. As well as our circumstance, but according to our Krishna consciousness primarily.
Thank you, Maharaj. I have two questions. The first one is, if Krishna's instruction is go do your work and go to school, then why at Prabhupada's time people are quitting what they were doing and serve in the temple full time?
Because that was Prabhupada's instruction for them. You may have a different instruction. So we do according to our instruction. Now Prabhupada was, this is my understanding, invite Dravida or others to edit. Prabhupada's age was very elder. His understanding was, he said it a number of times, I don't know how long I will be able to remain. So some of the things that Prabhupada did where urgency, if not emergency, kinds of decisions. I remember when I was a new devotee, Rishi Kumar was given sannyas at 21. And I was thinking, I was just a new bhakta. I was thinking, how is that going to last? I didn't really even know all the challenges that sannyasis would have, you know, but, and it didn't last. But Prabhupada was encouraging in a certain way because he needed to spread the movement because he wasn't going to be around for too long. So he took risks and he engaged people accordingly. Now, he's gone. Our founder Acharya is physically not present. And so other decisions may be made that are less emergency or urgency. It doesn't mean, you know, the material condition is less serious, but sustaining Krishna consciousness, you know, let's say you in particular, or anyone, but you in particular, you know, what is your nature? What is suitable to your nature? And what will allow you to go on with enthusiasm? Like Stira was saying, you know, seeing that your needs are met. And all other things, you know, expectations of your mother and father and your own ideas of whatever. Accomplishing something and feeling I've accomplished something. It's false ego. But, you know, being real, what's a realistic picture of what is good for you to progress in Krishna consciousness without the emergency mode? So different instructions are being given today than during Prabhupada's time, specific to those kinds of things. It's a detail, not a principle change, okay?
Mm-hmm. The second question is about the nature propensity. So is that important to do the work that match our nature propensity? The problem is that I currently people actually they do not know what they like.
That's right.
I feel like a lot of students, they just follow the mainstream. Like for example, a few years ago, many people think computer science is like will earn a lot of money, so they like study computer science.
Sure.
And nowadays,
there's a lot of people in the room that did that.
And right now, and a lot of people are studying finance because it's a very
It doesn't suit their nature. It's just, you know, get money.
Yes.
And,
so,
and there's jobs, so do it. Even it's not my nature. Yes, I agree with you. And therefore, they were guided by people that weren't trying to secure something that suits their nature. They were trying, well-wishing parents were wishing that their son or daughter have a good material life and job security and, you know, like, you know, your mother and father have as a wish for you. So it's the interest is not, you know, it's on the material side. Without a proper understanding of what's going to be sustainable and productive for your own, you know, balance and well-being and so on. But, you know, there's a different value from certain people. Older generation people, or people that don't have core spiritual value. People that have core spiritual value, they want to see. It's just like you weren't here yesterday, but Dravida was saying when he became a devotee, right away he was given an engagement that suited to his nature. I mean, he said it in a funny way, but he was engaged in proofreading. And his way of saying is, I was engaged in my fault-finding propensity. Oh, here's some mistakes. But, you know, he's an intellectual. that has language skills. So he was engaged very nicely, and you know, till today, here he is, a very happy brahmachari, more than a happy brahmachari. You know, very willing to just stay around for a while. He's very blissful, very properly situated. That's good.
So the problem is that I feel I have lost my nature. I don't know like what I like. I like maybe many other people they also have the same feeling. We only know like what other people like, what the society like.
Yeah, right.
But gradually I lost my own voice. So
yeah.
my question at the beginning is that important to do?
Yes.
The work.
But there's something more important. And that, you know, when the question of do according to your nature, then, you know, then in the next breath is do what you like. You know, what we like is not necessarily what our nature is. It's maybe material enjoyment, sense gratification, you know, specifically, and not necessarily, you know, a deeper understanding of what my nature is or what my voice is. It's just I like it. Like a child likes to play. That's my nature. I like to play. Let me just please engage me according to my nature. Excuse me, according to what I like. So there's a distinction between what I like and what my nature is. But there's sometimes we do things that are not necessarily according to our nature because there's another purpose. And, you know, there's another value that's driving, and, you know, let's say, in your case, you know, the expectations of your father. They're significant, and the relationship that you have with your father is, you don't want to go against, you know, the expectations of your father. Then over here is, you know, discovering what my nature is. And then even more fundamental is what your Krishna consciousness is, because that's core. So other things can be adjusted. I'll just use myself as an example. I do lots of things. Lots of things I don't like. And I don't think they're even according to my nature. But I do them because they're service. I discriminate. I don't just like anybody gives me anything and I do it because it's service. But I do things not necessarily because I like them or even necessarily because it's my nature. But it's, you know, my relationship with my spiritual master, and I understand to whatever my capacity is to understand, this is something that he would want. And so I do. Not because it's my nature. My nature is I'm rebellious. I want to do what I want. So there's other standards even beside what your nature is. So in this stage of your Krishna consciousness and your career development and your studies and stuff, you can continue. My recommendation, in short, you know, it's not I'm speaking to you but others, as you awaken your Krishna consciousness as your foremost concern, then in turn through your own introspection and through the guidance of others that are guiding you, you start to discover more about what your nature is than you did yesterday or today even, going forward and tomorrow, then little by little, over a period of time, you can consider how to move towards what your nature is. But career development starts much earlier than where you are right now. It started a long time ago. It's really tough to change career development at this stage. But still, you can move directionally somewhat towards something that's more according to your nature. Be less concerned with that. You should be concerned with that. It's important, because that's what you're asking. It's important. But more important is your core Krishna consciousness. Don't sacrifice that. Don't become so concerned with pleasing others or what's my nature, and you forget Krishna. Don't sacrifice that. Cultivate that. Let these other things be impetuses to help you with that. Okay?
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. One more question, and I think we'll end.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. The question about the two forms of surrender or taking shelter that Jiva Goswami mentions.
Yeah.
So, my question mainly is that without the second form of actually rejecting all other shelters, the first form, which is just declaring that I'm taking your shelter, seems superficial.
Well, it's not quite the same, because akinchana, because this is akinchanatvam, having the characteristic of no other shelter, is the first one. So, you just declare it. And then, the second one is, with these six limbs, I'm actively pursuing it. It's very similar to the... Were you here yesterday evening? And you heard Dravida's answer to the question, to Jivanajiva's question? Now, the active process of hearing and chanting is what Lord Chaitanya accepted. So you actively submit in practical activity that brings one closer and closer and closer and closer and closer, closer, till you touch the lotus feet of Krishna and there's nothing else. Although you may have declared there's nothing else, you're actively cultivating further and further to the position of pure devotion. Fully operative. That is what surrender is. And it has six limbs. And there's an angi amongst the angas. And we're going to hear some more about it.
Thank you.
Hand waving here. This is the last question. We'll have to take a break.
Maharaj, you said that there are multiple shelters. So what are some examples of these multiple shelters that are available to us, and how do we identify them?
Well, you know, they're false shelters, first of all. You know, like as Dravida was saying, fallible shelters. Oh, you know, my family. That's a false shelter. My job. That's a false shelter. My money. That's a false shelter. My house. That's a false shelter. My prestige. That's a false shelter. You know, they're abundant. So many false shelters. And we want happiness through those things. And if there's some damage done to those things, oh. False shelters. And then when we become a nihilist, or, you know, the false renunciation spirit, give it up. And that is not, surrender. It's a kinshana in the negative sense. Impersonalist. I have no shelters. But real kinshana is shelter in Krishna. Then there's the positive cultivation. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.